Hi, I'm Kieran and welcome to the Growth Lessons podcast. I run a community called Launch MBA where motivated makers who want to become founders support each other in shipping 12 products or ideas in 12 months to see what gets traction. We host regular Ask Me Anything sessions with successful founders where we ask them about their past failures, their learnings and how this translated into success. You're about to hear one of those sessions. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome everyone, and thanks for making it such a good turnout for Jens. Obviously, you're very busy with your life on the road, and so we really appreciate you pulling over in a lay-by or car park and finding an internet connection to do this. So as you know, Launch MBA is fairly new, and the whole concept behind it is people coming together and supporting each other and launching multiple projects with the idea that nothing is guaranteed. It's extremely hard to predict what's going to work. So if you can get into the habit of launching many projects and learning from them as you go, eventually you're going to find something that sticks. And that's what we're in, just coming to the second month now. So a lot of people have already launched one product. There's a whole kind of broad spectrum of ability levels in terms of no code and different interests and things like that. And I think, you know, launching 12 products in 12 months has the potential to generate a lot of good content and perhaps build an audience on Twitter and also in a mailing list. But I would love to hear from you, or we would all love to hear from you, a bit about your background, how you found no code, what you did before that, other projects you've tried to launch that perhaps didn't go so well, but you've learned from. I know you had the very successful action figure idea, which went really well, and I'd like to hear about that. And then, yeah, we can just go into questions. I'm sure people would love to know your advice for how to build an audience. You know, some people starting from almost nothing.
Cool, I'm happy to share. Let me start at where I began to be interested in marketing. So I spent 12 years as a travel photographer and lifestyle photographer. So I did that since from 2005 somewhere, and 12 years ahead. And in 2013, I was at a small coffee shop in my hometown by then, Malmö, in the south of Sweden, close to Copenhagen. And I was ordering a coffee. And while I was talking to the barista, my phone rang and it was a foreign number. And I answered, and this woman says, "Hi, this is Janet from CNN. I would like to talk to you about the video you posted." And I was like, I was kind of confused. And I told her why, because you already called me like 2 hours ago. CNN already called me 2 hours ago. And she was super confused as well. And then we talked a bit. And then finally she said, "Oh, that was CNN New York. This is CNN London." And I wasn't very surprised then, because the months before and after that was really, really hectic. Yes, as you mentioned, a year before I wanted to do some kind of marketing for my business, my photography business. And I wanted to do something that no one had done before. And for some reason, I came up with the idea, why don't I create an action figure of myself, like a physical, a real action figure of myself, and send out to potential clients. So I found this company in China, a factory, that could create these resin figures. And during 1 year from then, I sent pictures of me, like a full figure picture. I got back pictures of their first prototype made in clay, and it didn't look at all like me at first. And so I had to like put the picture on top of the picture and like show them, "You need to do this, you need to change that." And I did some rounds back and forth, and finally they had something that looked quite like me. They made that into a mold and created one figure and sent it to me in Sweden. And at the same time, I created these, like the box, I created the design. I gathered all the mailing addresses. Like 1 year after, I had 400 action figures of myself, about this size. You can find them if you Google my name and action figure, Jens Lennartsson and action. And when I got them, I got a few friends together and to help me package them, because I got the boxes in one from one factory. I got the figures. I had to like cut out small plastic pieces to put in front of the box. I had to package them, wrap them. Got a few friends together, and I knew I wanted to make a video so people could see the concept, see how I did it. So one part was sending it out to potential customers, but the other part, and my thought was that that would be the more important part, was to get it out broadly, to show the concept, to show the whole idea for other people. Because I would only be able to send it to 400 people, and they might be showing it to their friends and the people visiting their offices. But the big momentum I would get from showing the world. So as we were packaging the figures during one day or 2 days, I had another friend filming everything. So we filmed the whole packaging process. And when we had done that, I had to fake like the previous year, because I didn't film anything during that year. So I had to film a fake when someone took the pictures of me, when I got the pictures back from the factory in China, when we got the first figure, when I sat with a friend and did the design. The problem was during that year, I had grown a full beard. When I started, I just had a mustache and like a goatee. So as we filmed it, I had to time it. I had to shave off the beard. So because the figure had like the mustache and the goatee. So I had to end up somewhere there. So as we were filming, we kind of like backtracked, and I shaved my beard to match where we were in the process of creating the figure. So that's a long story. When I sent it out, I sent the figures out. I waited a few weeks because I wanted the people who got them to enjoy them. And then I posted this video. I posted this video, and I wrote in the title of the video was the most epic marketing stunt, the most epic photography marketing stunt ever done, or something like that. And I got in touch with one friend that he's running a blog, a photography blog, posting only videos about photography. And I gave it to him. He posted it. And then another blog picked it up called Paid Up Pixel, which is really, really big. And from there on, I didn't do anything. From there on, I had 5,000 people on my website at all time for 3-4 weeks. And my phone were ringing constantly. As I said, CNN were calling me twice the same day, and so on and so on. So that was really, really hectic. And that was also the time when I realized the power of good marketing. Because during this year, it took for me to create this figure. I kind of grew tired of photography, because this was when photography started to be everywhere. You had like Instagram and Facebook and Flickr. So everything was photography. And I've been doing it professionally for 12 years. And I was kind of tired of taking pictures. So I was looking for something else to do. And when I realized the power of this, like how one video code could bring in so much views, so much potential customers, I started to explore that. I started to try to figure out why it worked so well. So that's kind of why I started with marketing, and I've been doing that since. And skipping forward a bit, I've had my Twitter account since 2008, and I've been using it for a week here and there, and then forgot about it again. But in December last year, for some reason, I decided like let's try what happens if I just do it for real for 1 month. So I decided to do 10 posts a day for one month. And I didn't have an audience more than the one I got from posting, from doing the action figure stunt. But they were interested in photography. They were interested in that kind of stuff. I kind of had to start from scratch. So I started to post about marketing in like a broad sense. And as I did that, after a few days, I realized that I could see a common denominator among the people who got in touch with me. And I got I realized there's a thing called no code. So that's how I got into the no code community. And some people get in touch with me thinking that I am a no coder, that I build stuff with no code. I suck at doing that. I suck at building stuff because I love trying out new tools. Like Webflow and Airtable and whatever it is. But I grow tired quite kind of quickly and I try something new. But I realized that a lot of people are exceptionally good at doing things, at building things, but they suck at marketing. That's why I started to dig in that part of the Twitter universe. Like, how can I help the people in the no-code community to market their tools and market their project? So I decided to focus my tweets about marketing to fit the no-code community, to write about the questions they have, to answer the questions they have. When I gave examples of like, this is how you could market your tool, I picked an example from the no-code world. And quite quickly, I became the marketing guy in the no-code world, in the no-code community on Twitter. And that's kind of how I continued. So I am doing that. I continued to create the ebook, helping no-coders to do Twitter. I've created an e-course, how to market your no-code projects. I do consultancy work for no-code startups and so on, so on. So I built my entire content platform. I built my entire product platform about marketing, but for the no-code community. Because I believe that if you pick a niche, it'll be much more easy to reach that target audience or to reach anyone. It's easier to reach a very small group of people than it is to reach everyone. I mean, if you want to reach everyone, like the companies selling toilet paper or Coca-Cola or table salt, you need millions and millions of dollars in marketing, in a marketing budget. And you need to keep pumping that money into marketing at all times to stay on top of people's mind. But if you don't have that, massive money behind you, if you don't have that many people that can work for you day and night, you should and you need to focus on a niche, because then you can help them in a better way.
So it's interesting, the no-code community kind of found you. I guess you're lucky it wasn't like some tiny niche community that you got involved with. It happens to be one of the fastest growing ones with a huge demand for what you're talking about.
I mean, it was quite a small community back then. I know Michael from No Code Coffee, he posted a graph with the amount of tweets tagged with no code in December and for the next 5 months. And in December, I think it was 500 tweets. 4 months later, and still going up, it was 5,000 tweets. So I guess it was a mix between me finding a niche and seeing the potential in that niche, because it was quite small then. I mean, it was just starting to boom.
It's great to hear that you're kind of learning along with the rest of us, because I mean, when the way you tweet, it always sounds like you've been around forever, and I think everyone kind of assumes that, but you only actually started in December, which is really recent.
Yeah, with Twitter I did, and I mean, I learned, and that's the thing. First of all, it's very quick. I mean, you do learn very fast if you really try, if you really commit to doing it for a certain amount of time. Whatever you pick, I mean, if it's playing the ukulele or being good at Twitter, or I mean, creating apps with or creating websites with Webflow. I mean, if you do it every day for a month, you'll be 10 times as good after 30 days compared to 30 days before. You said something quite interesting as well. I mean, you said that the no-code community found me, and that's how I think you should do marketing. That's how you should do content marketing. I mean, you should never sell in public. And what I mean with that is you shouldn't push your product on Twitter. You shouldn't push your product in your blog or your YouTube channel. Talk about the things people are interested in. Like, so when they look at you from the outside, the only thing you're talking about is things they want to hear more about. So you're helping them solve the problems they have. You're helping them with their pain points. You're talking about the things they are interested in. And then you give them an option to opt in for your mailing list. And then you can sell to them in private. Because if 50% of what you put on Twitter is product pitches, or you telling them that, hey, I have a discount on my ebook, and the next day it's the same thing, and the next day it's the same thing. If they are not interested in solving the problem your product is solving right there, you're losing them. They might be interested in buying they might want to solve the problem, and they might want to buy your ebook, but it might not be the right opportunity. It might be that they don't know they have the problem yet. They know that, but they don't have the money, or they are on a train and they can't buy it now, or whatever. It's not the right opportunity. But if it's not the right opportunity, they won't take action then, and they will forget about it. So that's why I'm always telling people, do everything you can to get people on your mailing, because then you will have like a direct channel to talk to them. If you have 1,000 followers on Twitter and you post a tweet, on a good day, 100 people of those will see that tweet. If you send an email, let me say it like this. If you have 1,000 followers and you post a tweet, 100 people will be shown that tweet by Twitter. Not everyone will read it, but only 10% will be shown it. The other 90% won't even see it. They won't have an opportunity to interact with it. Whereas with email, if you have 1,000 people on your mailing list and you send out an email, 99% of those subscribers will receive it. Not everyone will open it. Maybe 30% will open it, 40%. But everyone will receive it because there's no algorithm stopping. I'm going to stop there. So I can go on forever. So
well,
point
I think
me in the right direction.
I think the biggest challenge for me, at least, is I can see the theory behind building an audience, but it's so hard to know what to write. And when you have a mailing list, you feel like, oh, I owe these people. Like I've got to send them like regular updates, but what do I write about? And if you don't have, you know, a niche or experience like you do in marketing where you can really target it, I mean, what do you do? It's you can't go from nothing to trying to sell them something.
But you don't have to know your niche. I didn't know my niche. I knew my topic. I knew my expertise, but I didn't know who I could help the most. I didn't even know about no code. I just started talking about what I knew best, and that's marketing or email marketing. And I realized when I talked about that, when I talked about how to build an audience, when I talked about how to market a product, as you said, the no-code community found me because they needed that information. So instead of thinking about what niche you have, if you don't have one, try to figure out what you know. What do you know that you can help other people with? What do you know that can make the lives of other people better? There's basically two ways to do that. Either you sit down and you write down everything you know. Like what's your expertise? What do you know? So for me, I know marketing. I know email marketing. I know a lot about how it is to be an entrepreneur with ADHD. I know how to suck at keeping focus and also how to like battle that. I know how to play the trumpet. I know a lot about the van life or living sustainably. So you can just write down everything you know a lot about. You don't even know, you need to know a lot about it, but you need to know more than a lot of other people. And if you've read 2 books or 3 books about a topic, you know more than other people. So you can either do that, write down everything you know that you know. I mean, if you've been working as in an HR department, if you've been working with automations a lot, if you've been working a lot with some kind of tool like WordPress, or you know a lot about Airtable, you know a lot about whatever it is. If you know how to, sell more t-shirts or sell more clothes, or how to print stuff, whatever it is, you can talk about that, because if you know something about it, there are people out there that are having problems that you already know how to solve. The other way to do it is to, if you already have a product or the idea of a product, then you can, and that product probably builds on the first thing, like the expertise you have, because you can't build a product if you don't have an expertise. So let's say you're building a social media scheduling tool. I don't know if you know about Hypefury. I'm using Hypefury.
Yeah.
That's actually what I signed up for when I started in December. I saw this tool and they offered like a 2-week free trial, and I signed up so I could post. I could write my 10 tweets one time, and they will be posted during the day. So let's say you're building a Twitter scheduling tool. There's a reason for why you're doing that. I mean, you want to help someone to do something, to solve a problem. So yes, you're helping people to schedule their tweets, but that's what you're doing. So why are you doing that? People don't want to schedule tweets because they want to schedule tweets. People don't look for an accountant because they want to have an accountant. They look for an accountant because they don't have an idea for how to do their taxes, and they are scared that they are going to get like a penalty fee, or that the police are going to knock on the door and throw them in jail because they tried to hide $10,000. The same with the scheduling tool. It's not because they want to schedule tweets, because people don't do that for fun. They do it for a reason. It's probably because they want to grow their audience on Twitter. They want to grow an audience because they want to sell a product, or they want to get more coaching clients, or whatever it is. So when you have the product and you know what the product is helping them with, you dig even deeper and to see why do the people want to solve this? Why do people want to be helped with this? And then you can write about that. So back to the scheduling tool. If you have a product or an idea for a product, start talk about how to solve the problem that your product is solving. Let me see if you have.
Okay, can you see the question?
Yeah, I can.
I'll just ask it for the sake of the video, because I don't know if we recorded. So Glenn said, how do you measure the success of an MVP launch so that you know the idea has merit? E.g., do you go by the number of email subscribers or by the conversion rate on the website? Is it a gut feeling or all of the above?
Can I just finish on your question, Nick Kieran? So with what I said there, does it make sense, or is it still hard to understand how to build the audience?
No, yeah, it makes perfect sense. The thing, I guess you kind of have to feel around, because when you start building the audience, you may not know what products you eventually want to put out there, and you don't know, you know, I could start talking about one thing I'm interested in or one thing I know about, and then I could come up with an idea for a product that's related to something else, and I've built an audience based on the first thing, but actually I want to try move more towards something else. And I know when you were originally tweeting, I remember you tweeted quite a lot about ADHD and being an entrepreneur with ADHD, but then you kind of moved away from that and were way more focused on no code. So I guess you could sense where the demand for, or where there were kind of more people resonating with your message.
That's a good example, because basically I wrote about marketing, and I wrote about like stuff that could help entrepreneurs with ADHD. I kind of knew that I wanted to help and talk to entrepreneurs. And the ADHD part is still very interesting to me, because I see so many entrepreneurs and people in the maker community struggling with that. And I can see that it's because you have ADHD. I mean, I don't have it on paper that I have ADHD, but I've been talking to my therapist. I've been talking to my like a home doctor, what do you call it? And they say like, yes, most certainly you have ADHD. And there's so many people that I know are somewhere on that scale as well. And it's definitely interesting to me still, and I will do something about that. But like you said, I tweeted about it all, and they all kind of worked together because I knew there was some kind of, I mean, the niche or the target audience was entrepreneurs somehow. And as you said, I decided somewhere that I wanted to focus more on the marketing part. And that's what you can do. I mean, you don't have to decide like day one, this is what I want to talk about. You need to, I mean, unless you want to look like a complete maniac with like multiple personalities, you need to have some kind of like framework. I mean, you shouldn't be talking about marketing and ADHD and van life and veganism and skydiving, because it would be so hard for people to, I mean, there would be very few people with all those interests. But if you can, you can talk about different things, and you can move around a little bit, because that's a good thing. When you start to put yourself out there and share your knowledge and ask questions, you will see what people will interact with the most, and you can write more about that. So if I write a tweet about something and I get lots and lots of likes and comments and retweets, I usually write a thread about that, maybe with some visuals and stuff like that. And I write a blog post, and I write more about it in my newsletter. That's another question you had, like how do I write continuous content for my newsletter? It takes you 20 minutes to write a newsletter each week. It's not about finding what to write about. It's just deciding that each Monday at 2 p.m., I'm going to sit down and write this newsletter, no matter what. And then you keep like a backlog of ideas, what to write about, and you just pick one. Or just pick your best tweet from the last week and write 200 words about that. So instead of thinking too much about where to start, pick something from one of the two things I said, like your knowledge or the problem your product solves, and just start write about that, because you won't be able to pick the right thing without trying. You need to start somewhere and then try.
Yeah, well, that's what we're all about at Launch MBA, is trying stuff out.
Yeah.
So going back to Glenn's question, how do you measure the success of an MVP launch? Email subscribers, conversion rate, gut feeling?
I would say gut feeling. I would say it's, I usually, and I know Michael Gill does the same, I usually create like a sales page, and I do a pre-sale without even having the product. I might be doing, before the ebook I put out, I did this, and I realized this is not going to sell. I did a sales page for an ebook called newsletter hot sauce. So I love chili sauce. I have like 15 bottles in the van, and I mean, I use them like to spice up my food, so I can take any dish and I put some hot sauce on and it's going to taste much better. So I wanted to do like 40 hacks that you can do in 1 hour to improve your mailing list. And I created a sales page, I created 3 example chapters and 3 example videos, and I put them out there. And I thought people were going to be really, really interested, because everyone want to grow their mailing list. And I had very few sales. And when I asked the people that actually bought it, why they bought it, most of them, almost everyone said, you're putting out so much good content, so I wanted to give something back. So they bought my ebook because they wanted to give me something back, not because they liked the idea of the ebook very much. So I realized that people don't have any use for an ebook that will help them improve their mailing list because they don't have a mailing list. I mean, I jumped ahead. So the first thing I need to do is to show people how to build a proper mailing. So I scrapped that idea, and I created my e-course, Minimum Viable Marketing, to show people and startups and makers how to build your minimum viable mailing list or minimum viable marketing funnel. And then maybe in a few years, this idea for newsletter hot sauce will be good, because then I've taught people how to create the mailing list, and now I can show them how to improve it. So to answer the question, I usually do a pre-sales page. I usually create the image of the product. Let me just turn on the light. Create the product page and I pre-sell the product. Then I weigh that with how much do I believe in the product myself? Do I know that even if there's not too many people buying this, that there's a lot of people with this problem? So if the people are not buying the product, but I know a lot of them or all of them are having the problem I'm solving, I need to repackage it. I still go on creating the product, but I need to repackage it. So I would say it's a lot of gut feeling, but the gut feeling is based on what I've heard before. I usually don't write down like today, 10 people reacted to my post about how to build a mailing list, but I have a feeling about it. So I would say gut feeling, pre-sales, and also I do a lot of things that doesn't scale. So I do reach out to people a lot to ask them, like, why did you buy it? Why did you not buy it? And so on. So I usually don't put too much weight on numbers.
Yeah, I think I remember your how to improve your mailing list landing page, and it was exactly that. I was like, I would love to have a mailing list, but I don't have one, so it's of no use to me, I'm afraid. But yeah, you did exactly the right thing and just pivoted to a slightly earlier kind of target market subject.
And also even earlier because the first product I put it after that was Twitter for no coders, because before you build your, if you want to get people on your mailing list, you need to be active on Twitter first so that people will find you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have Twitter for no coders. It's very good. Awesome. So we had a couple of questions which from Valentin and from June, which I think will be answered when they read Twitter for no coders. But Valentin said, do you only need to tweet or do you have to reply to people and like other tweets? It's a newbie question, but definitely this part of commenting and liking takes a lot of time. And June said, how long did you tweet 10 times a day? Were there any shifts in strategy and why?
So for Valentin's question first, I mean, when you're starting out, when you don't have too much people that are following you, you won't get too many likes or retweets. I mean, the algorithm will favor tweets or people that are getting a lot of retweets and a lot of likes and a lot of comments, because those tweets are interesting. That's the way the Twitter algorithm can decide if a tweet is interesting or not, not the amount of interaction it gets. So when you have a lot of people following you, a lot of people or more people will like and share and comment. But when you have 100 people following you and 50 of them seeing your tweets, it's basically like talking to empty seats. So when you don't have, and this is also combined with June's question, how long did I tweet 10 times a day? I mean, I don't think you should tweet 10 times a day. I'm writing about that in a book. Because when you don't have a lot of followers, you should focus more on interacting with other people's accounts and other people, big accounts, than you do writing your own tweets. Because the only thing your own tweets are doing in the beginning or anytime is making sure that when someone clicks on your profile and looks through your feed, they will see interesting things. So what I suggest you do when you're starting out is to post three tweets a day, three good tweets. Like, put some time into those tweets. Don't just write it. Like, write it and look at it, rewrite it. See, is it good? Is to like look what other people are doing when they're writing tweets. Like, how can I make this tweet better? Can I add an emoji? Can I make it more clear? Can I add even more value? Like, instead of making 10 meh tweets, like, create three really, really good tweets, and then focus the rest of your time on interacting with other people, answer questions, follow big accounts in your niche or in like that are talking about the things that you're doing, and comment on their tweets. Focus 70% on that, like commenting on other tweets, like following big accounts and adding to their tweets, liking, sharing, retweeting, whatever it is. Focus 70% on that. and then make sure that every day you're putting out three really, really good tweets, because that's how you find, that's how people find you. They see something you write because someone retweeted it, or you posted, you answered a question, or you commented on a big account's tweet, and they click your profile. The first thing they will see is your description, your bio, and then they will scroll through your feed. And if they like what they see, if they can see like within the first 10 or 5 tweets that, hey, this guy's talking about marketing and he's doing that for makers, or this guy is talking about vegan van life, or like how fitness for nerds. If you are within that niche, if you are that person and you have that problem, you will follow that account. So the tweets you put out on your, that you write originally, like for your own feed, that's basically in the beginning, that's only so that when people come to your feed, they will see what you're talking about. Then you should focus everything on growing your reach. It's kind of like, I think I talked about it in the video workshop that comes to the that comes with the like the high end package for my ebook. I talk about how starting on Twitter is like starting a comedy club. Like first you start in a basement and you have like your closest 10 friends, and you do a, you go up and you do your set. And they, if they like it, they would tell one friend each. But the next time, you will have 20 friends. And slowly but surely, it will grow. But if you want to grow quickly, you'll go to a big comedy club and you start hanging around in the bar and you start telling people about your, like you start telling people jokes. And when they like gather around you, you tell them about your club, your account. And if people like you enough, and like if the owner of that club like you enough, what you have to say, they will put you on stage in their club, which is basically like they are retweeting you. So you need to put out good content, but focus more on using the platforms of others, like going to follow the big accounts and comment within a few minutes with good value, add value to their accounts, and they will. People will see you. People will see that tweet and they will click and they will come to your profile and they will see that those three tweets you posted today and yesterday.
Are there any specific people you follow where that you think we should all be following and doing that for? I mean, I know I've had a bit of success with posting on likes Sahil from Gumroad and James Clear before, but are there any others?
I mean, it all depends on what your topic is. I mean, if you're talking about marketing or if you're talking about selling stuff online, yes, you could do the CEO of Gumroad. But if your expertise is how to build a van or how to build a tiny house, there's no reason for following them, because the idea is to do that on accounts where the followers might be interested in what you have to say. So you need to follow the big accounts in your niche, in your like a topic.
Well, that's you then, and I'm already following you. But yeah, you haven't been tweeting so much recently.
No, as I said, my little dog has been sick.
Yeah, is it okay?
Yeah, she's actually really she's fine now. Okay. Thank you for asking. And I have I've had a lot of other things going on, so I just had to step back a little bit just to regroup, because sometimes it can be too much, like everything becomes Twitter. But yeah. I promise I will get back to it probably tomorrow, next day.
Well, I mean, no pressure, but I think
it's good pressure.
But I think it's good for everyone to know that it is the kind of thing that you can do like every day for a bit, and then you can leave it for a while, and you won't necessarily lose followers if you leave it.
You won't lose followers, but you will you'll have to work yourself up when it comes to the algorithm, because
yeah,
it will take a while until you get the same traction. But it's not all about Twitter, it's not all about marketing, you it's not all about hustling or selling or creating. Sometimes you need to like spend time with family, sometimes you need to just get away from the screens. So do it as consistently as you can. And when you need to take a break and then just get back to it. I mean, you won't lose any followers. You might need like a few days extra to get it rolling again.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think that's a good message to leave with. So no one should feel under pressure to do 10 tweets a day or even 3, because that's quite a lot. We are now out of time, and I don't want to take up any more of your time because I'm sure you have lots of van stuff to do. But yeah, thank you very much on behalf of everyone for taking the time out to speak to us. It was super interesting. We learned so much stuff, and I'm sure everyone's going to check out Twitter for No Coders and pay for it as well. But yeah, send a discount code if you can. That would be great.
I'll send a discount code. And if you have any more questions about anything, marketing or whatever it is, just get in touch with me on Twitter, and I'm happy to answer it.
Cool. Thanks a lot. Have a great evening. And thanks, everyone, for coming.
Thank you. Cheers, Jane. Cheers, yes.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode. To read the Growth Lessons newsletter, go to growthlessons.co. And if you'd like to learn more about our community, go to launchmba.co. And remember, everyone has a successful business in them. The only question is whether you can keep going long enough to find it.